Hello, this is Richard Mortimer from Niche Domination Life teleclass, and we've got to the second step in the program. We had an introductory call, then we had the first step last week, which was product creation. And what I'm doing this week is, this will probably be a bonus call, but I've got a good friend, Trevor Dumbleton, and I'm going to be interviewing him about sales letter creation. So Trevor, good to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. And you've done quite a lot on sales letters this year. I mean, you've actually written quite a lot, haven't you?
And as I was chatting before the call, over the years, done what you might call proper sales letters in that go out through the post.
Okay, excellent. And there's quite a crossover on that, is there?
Well, yeah, because the internet is really direct mail, but on the web.
It's just the media is different.
Yeah, if you look at it, most of the best performing sales letters on the internet are what's known as long copy. If they were printed out, you're looking at quite a few of them, 14, 15, 16 pages.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
And there's a reason for that.
Okay. I still actually get through the mail, I still get a letter with lots of highlighting and different coloured ink and that kind of thing, you know, and things crossed out and pictures and proof,
yep.
You know.
It's exactly the same on the web.
Yeah, okay. Very interesting.
What you'll find is that everyone says, no one reads those.
Well, I do.
Well, yeah, and in practice, some people do. And also Google does. So it can index all the words in it. But mainly, the logic on a sales letter is that you should cover every single possible objection that you might get if you were face-to-face with someone.
Okay, interesting. So let me just ask the first question then here, and that is, how important is a sales letter?
There's no single answer to that, as you've probably heard me say before. No, of course not. if you've done the pre-sell right, then the sales letter could just be buy it.
Okay, so you've
got if someone actually wants to buy the product, I mean, how long a sales letter does Coca-Cola use?
I've got no idea.
Well, you've seen an advert for them?
I'm a little bit of caveman when it comes to that kind of thing.
Right. Well, okay. Anything you buy regularly, milk.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen a sales letter for it?
Perhaps I've not been calling it sales letter because it is so short.
Yeah, it just says milk, and it might be skimmed or semi-skimmed or whole.
I remember the classic one was the Smirnoff advert. They were really struggling to sell Smirnoff, and they went to an ad agency and they came up with a little slogan. Smirnoff vodka, it takes your breath away.
That's given you, a 10-word sales letter?
Yeah, and obviously they were saying the main feature of vodka was that that you don't get the smell on the breath.
Yeah, so a sales letter can be as short as that, or it can be like Gary Halbert used when he was alive, which is a complete paperback book.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, he basically gave away for the cost of post and packing as something like a 200 or 300 page book, or 100 page book, whatever it was.
Okay.
And effectively, that was the advert for the main product.
Okay.
And it can be all points in between if that's just scared half the audience.
Yeah, it's one of these topics, isn't it, that is a little bit of do I have to sort of thing? And I mean, my answer is yes, you do. And if you really want to be successful on the internet, you've got to get it covered. Either you do it yourself or you pay someone to do it for you. And when you pay, it's big money, isn't it?
If it's done right, yes, because top copywriters in the world are very, very expensive because they can sell products. They know exactly which buttons to press in people's minds to get them to buy them. Guy who's, again, dead now, Joe Sugarman, used to sell, in the States, blue blocker sunglasses.
Right.
Amongst other things, and he called the sales letter a slippery slide, with each paragraph leading on to the next one.
I see, yeah.
And he'd get people buying his products, reading his adverts because of his creativity. He gave discounts to people for spotting all the spelling mistakes in an advert.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, but if you're talking a multi-thousand word advert, they've actually got to read it to spot the spelling mistakes.
I see. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And that worked?
Well, in printed, it'd be a lot easier online because you could just run it through a spell checker.
I see, yeah.
But, yeah, that worked for him. But there's several tricks with sales letters. I don't know if how familiar you are with neuro-linguistic programming, NLP.
No, not really familiar. I mean, obviously I've heard of it quite a lot, but I couldn't really tell you what it is.
Right. One of the things it covers is that we have different what they call modalities, which are just ways of interacting with the world. People are either visual, audio, or kinesthetic.
I know those three.
Yeah. Because not everyone is all three, you need to cover all three in your sales letter.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'll become if you did a sales letter that was just in audio terms, so I hear what you're saying, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You'd turn off the people that had gut reactions and you'd turn off the people that saw what was happening.
No, I understand. So let's just clarify something here. The auditory is the words.
Yeah, it's people, if you're talking to someone,
people tend to be saying the words in their mind as they're going through. An auditory person would identify with that and like that.
Yeah, a visual person is someone who can see a word and they'll know whether it's spelled right or not.
Okay.
And a kinesthetic person, if you watch NCIS, is someone like Gibbs who just has gut reactions all the time.
Okay.
And if you don't cover all three of those, you're alienating part of your market.
Yeah.
Scary thought. Next scary thought is the things like headings and subheadings.
Indeed.
Because the busier people will skim the sales letter, and quite often someone will go in with a headline, skim right the way down to the price. But in between times, there's maybe headings, and they'll read those, and those should form the story without you reading the rest of it.
All right, yeah, yeah.
And it's also why you use bullets, because, again, large blocks of text are daunting, so your bullets just make it look easy to read.
Okay.
We're going to place for the first question.
Yeah, so what? Let's just anchor this down a little bit. If somebody's starting out, and, you know, we're talking about people here, well, the live training is called niche domination. That's a big aim.
Yeah.
But I do think that's what people need to be aiming for if they're going to be making serious income online. Because it's so competitive now, and you've got to make a difference. And one way of making a difference is the copywriting. So let's just say somebody is determined to follow through, but they're writing their first sales letter. How do they start?
Literally, as though you were explaining it face-to-face with a friend.
Okay.
In which case, you're not going to ask every 3 minutes, are you going to buy it now?
No.
Even though you have to kind of subtly do that. But if you're explaining it to a friend and anticipating all the questions they could possibly ask you, and go through like that in your own voice, because that will come through, and that comes through as more honest, because it is.
Yeah.
So you don't go, if you're a used car salesman, using the standard analogy by trade, then you'd use that kind of language. But if you're not, if you're an academic, you'd use academic language, and if you're whatever else, it's why sales letters don't need to be perfect English. Your English teacher would probably scream at half the stuff I write, but they have done for the last long time. Because when I'm writing, I will use as I'd speak it rather than as an English teacher would go through and grammar it.
It's interesting you mentioned the second-hand car dealer, because I really can't stand them. And there's two reasons for that. A, because I've been in sales, and secondly, I know a lot about cars, so I don't want a load of BS.
Yeah. You know?
And if I'm being BS, I can see it coming, and I can see right through it, and I look at the person, you know, and I think, you haven't got a clue what you're doing. You know, you don't know anything about me. You've not asked me any questions at all. You just started to skew a load of spiel about this car.
Yep.
And it just rubs me up. It really does.
Well, the same goes in the sales letters. You need to make sure that doesn't come across as your attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
So be natural, and then once you've written it, let it rest for a day, unless you're writing it with someone else.
Okay.
Put it to one side, just put it out of your mind as much as possible, and then come back to it and reread it.
I see, yeah.
Ideally out loud. And that's just scared a load more people listening. Because you read it out loud in your head.
Yeah.
But if you actually read it out loud, everywhere you stumble, it's wrong.
Okay.
It really is that simple, and it will come out as glaringly obvious if you read it out loud, whereas if you read it in your head, you can skim over words, you can correct words, you can do all sorts of things, and you won't notice. As soon as it comes out of your mouth, you think, why on earth did I write it that way?
Yeah.
And
your mind's also, so your mind's already working on the way to the fix, how to put it right sort of thing as well.
Yeah, it goes back to how I wrote the direct sales ones with a... did it with a friend, and basically I did first draft because he was useless with a blank piece of paper, still is. He'd then rip it to shreds and virtually rewrite it, and then we'd go through and read it out loud, and you'd get through halfway through the first sentence, no, stop, correct that, and so on.
Okay.
To write a good sales letter, one of the reasons it's expensive, took us 4 to 5 days usually.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Not quite solid, but certainly working 4 or 5 hours each of those days, and you are stressed at the end of that.
I know doing my WSOs that I have to really allow a day. I mean, obviously it's over a period of days, but when you want to sit down and write one in a few hours, it's pretty hard going. I find it was actually quite good to be pushed for time to get it down, get it done.
Yeah, it's you can make them shorter. Most of my non-WSOs tend to be they take about an hour and a half, something like that.
Yeah.
They're not perfect by a long way.
No.
But there's also a good enough is good enough.
Yeah. When we're talking about $7 products, it's good enough.
Yeah, but sometimes cheaper products actually take more selling.
That's interesting. Well, because people are so sort of jaded, they keep buying lots and
free, supplies. Apparently, yeah. Free is quite difficult to sell.
Free is?
Hmm.
That's interesting.
Well, I think you got a squeeze page on, what do you get, 40, 50% if you're lucky?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're giving something away free, but they're having to part with their email address, which is always difficult.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting.
But, you know, if everyone liked free, then you'd get 100% opt-in.
That's true, yeah. That's true.
So, yeah, it varies by product, it varies by market, it varies by how much pre-sell you've done.
Yeah, indeed. Well, in this model, obviously, in this model, obviously, what we're teaching that people will have a free offer at the front end, and then they're going to be marketed to those people by email sequence, and the product should be loaded in the email sequence. So they should be warm to the person, and also you've got the chance of doing some pre-selling in the email sequence.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's been taught that way since years ago.
Yeah, and it still works.
It still works, yeah. But to get that free product, you've got to make it actually really worth their while to sign up. So you've got to do bullet points. This is what you're going to get. This is the benefit you're going to get. And it's the sell the sizzle, not the steak, isn't it?
Okay, this is interesting. So we're talking about a squeeze page here then. So you're not a great one for the very simple, straightforward squeeze page, which has a headline and then basically a big arrow, a dirty big arrow that sort of goes up and down and then...
That can work.
Yeah.
The only answer is to test, because different markets react differently.
Seems a bit insincere, doesn't it, that kind of squeeze page? It seems a bit like, well...
Not as insincere as the products where you click away from the page and you got it cheaper. So the people who buy it immediately pay more expensive.
Yeah, I know, that's true, yeah, yeah.
Not particularly a fan of that.
No, no. I've never tried that.
When I've pre-sold it, I've told people to do that.
What I have done is
when I've pre-sold affiliate programs like that.
Oh yeah. What I have done is I've like you know, cut the bonuses out or something like that, you know. So there's a genuine disadvantage in buying the cheaper.
Yeah, and the only way you're going to find out is test.
Yeah.
But it also depends what market you're in. Some of the affiliate products I sell are self-help, and that has a different perception to, say, internet marketing to an extent, even though the two are actually marketed to very, very similarly.
Yeah.
But if you were doing, I don't know, selling fishing lures or something like that, then you'd probably do it slightly differently.
Yeah.
You almost do it folksy and, you know.
It's a much more specialised market, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you're selling even a book on how to catch a bigger fish, a physical fish rather than metaphorical fish, you would probably tackle that market a bit differently. You'd use the same triggers, but not as overtly, not as in your face as, say, internet marketing, which can be very, very hypey and very brash.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it just seems the brasher the better, in a way. I mean, I love Eric Louvier. I've been working with him quite a lot recently, and he is brash. He tells it really straight. You know, we have a phrase. He calls a spade a spade.
Yep.
Well, that's Eric.
Yeah, and if you sign up for, say, Paul Meyer's list, who's one of the moderators on the Warrior Forum, he's very very laid back, but sells quite a lot.
Yeah.
But okay. That's his style. He comes across as though he was just chatting to you, oh, and by the way, this will help.
Oh, yeah.
And that, in a lot of ways, actually can work a lot better.
That's interesting. You've kind of followed that technique.
Yeah, well, part of that comes back to NLP and Ericksonian hypnosis and a few other things like that.
Okay.
Where basically the Ericksonian hypnosis, a guy called Milton Erickson, who was around however long ago it was now, who hypnotized people by telling them stories.
All right.
And we all experience that. If you go to watch a good film,
yeah,
you're there when the dinosaur thuds behind the person on the screen or whatever else it happens to be, you're there.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
So you're completely engrossed in that story, and that works for sales. Works a treat.
Right. Okay.
Because your barriers are down. You're in storytelling mode. You're not in no one's sales pitching to you, are they?
No. You're getting involved in the story.
Yeah.
You don't realise that you're actually the person that's sort of in the story.
Yeah, that's why companies pay for product placement. Because James Bond overdid it a few years ago, where everything was sponsored.
And everybody got very cynical about it.
Yeah, but it done properly, it's... And Ford sponsor most of the cars for the goodies in TV series, and they'll even pay for the baddies to have a different brand.
Oh, yeah.
Apple sponsor the number of TV shows you can watch with an Apple on the back of the screen, the laptop. Those will be paid product placements.
Okay, interesting.
It crops up everywhere, and that, again, your barriers are down because you're watching the show, you're not watching an advert, but actually you're doing both.
I see, yeah.
We're moving away from sales letters, but think the same kind of thing and just tell people, give them good information, and just weave the occasional link in, much like Wikipedia takes you off to a different page.
Well, there's a very extreme example in Formula One now, because a few years ago, tobacco advertising was completely banned in Formula One.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was very tobacco-dependent. Years ago, you know, 10 years ago or more.
Yep.
It's your phone, just there.
My phone.
It's
not a number I recognise.
So, it's gone in the bin.
No, it'll just be buried and whatever.
I see, yeah. So, yeah, but Ferrari have still got Marlboro sponsorship. But they can't write Marlboro on the car, so they've got like a subliminal, it's almost like a barcode.
Right.
On the side of the car.
So it'll be the red downward V or whatever it is.
Well, it's not that. It's I have to look at it, but it's like it's more like a barcode actually. It's like a white and red barcode. So it just looks like somebody's painted a load of lines on the side of the car. But how much they're paying for it and how much it works, I've got no idea. But it must do something, otherwise they wouldn't be paying for it, would they?
Well, tobacco companies are a race apart. They don't operate in... They've never operated in sort of normal boundaries because they've always been a bit dodgy to sell the product.
Oh, yeah.
So it could just be... And they're high margin as well because they're high tax.
Okay.
Yeah, we won't go there. They're just a weird industry. But, yeah, there's lots of different ways. I mean, because I think, yeah, was it whiskey adverts over here? We had two terriers and it was black and white. And at one stage is, what are you advertising? I'm not allowed to tell you.
All right.
I remember reading that. It's the two dogs talking. And obviously Camel will tend to do... There's lots of ways of kind of getting around it, but not for long term, because you need the awareness for people to recognise what you're trying to sell them.
I see, yeah. Okay. Okay.
But we're digressing from sales letters. Sales letters, you need a very good headline, otherwise people aren't going to do anything else.
No.
So spend a good... You could do a whole lesson on sales, on headlines if you really wanted.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking today, you know, because about your approach, this sort of laid-back Paul Myers kind of approach, storytelling approach. But then the headlines, you know, quite often they need to really grip people.
Yeah.
And I think that there's certain words that are trigger words, like for instance, explode. I've seen that used quite a lot in headlines. And
yeah,
action words. But then obviously if you don't use that word... Yeah, go on.
Yeah, we come back to the Sugar Man thing and make it a slippery slope, make the headline... It can be anything. I mean, some mail order people will tell you it's got to be a set number of words, others will be like Dan Kennedy where it can be half an essay.
Okay.
Again, there's no one right answer. There's lots and lots of different right answers.
Go to
a newsagent and look at the magazines and the newspapers. The newspapers, the tabloid newspapers, maybe often have one word that fills up most of the page.
Okay.
Whereas the broadsheet, or what was the broadsheet, the Quality Press, will have longer headlines.
Right.
If you want a good lesson in headlines, go to the magazines section on Amazon.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Because magazines sell on the headlines that are on the front page.
Right, they do, don't they? Yeah, yeah.
Amazon's magazines section will have the most popular magazines as the front because they know that's what's going to sell, and then those will be the ones with the headlines on.
So how could somebody take a headline from a different... Obviously, it was a magazine. You're not going to get an internet marketing magazine, I don't think. But so what sort of magazine should they look for? And if they find a good headline that they think really is good, how can they make it into their own niche, you know, and modify it that way?
Very easily. I just literally, while we were speaking, looked at Amazon's magazine sections, and you got Popular Science, How It Works.
Oh, yeah.
And twist that round to anything. So how internet marketing works, how the audio conference on Skype works, or whatever.
Yeah.
The next one is 44 Fast Healthy Recipes.
Okay.
Cosmopolitan... Yeah, okay, we won't read all of those out. This could be listened to by families. what else? 50 Best Kitchen Ideas. Now, notice that the previous one was 44 Healthy Eating Ideas, so X number. That works all the time.
Oh, yeah.
116 barbecue recipes, 97 something or others. 55 colourful ideas. Property mechanics, survive anything. You could turn any of those into an internet marketing thing. Survive anything that is used regularly in internet marketing anyway.
Survive anything, yeah.
Well, survive the last Google slap, survive the Penguin update, survive the death of whatever it is this week.
Like solo ads.
Yeah. So that's just skimming without even zooming in on the things. Stress-free summer, we've got another one. So you could, you know, stress-free internet marketing.
Right.
Another one. Lose weight faster is another headline on here. Just headlines everywhere.
Wow.
Those are just the boldest ones. Want to lose weight faster has got a subhead, new secrets for slimming down. And that brings us on to having a subhead as well as a headline.
Yeah.
Which is the next font size down. Do you need that extra cookie? Do you need that extra cookie?
Yeah.
So that's something what did it say? Gain mastery over cravings. Now these will all be tested. Men's Health, if you can get hold of the back issues of that, tests like mad. There you are, I've got a fishing one. Catch fish like crazy. So it's used in fishing as well.
But they are so simple. All those headlines you read out are so simple.
Yeah. Because with magazines, you've got the attention span of a goldfish, basically. There's how many magazines on a rack? There's a dozen on the upwards on the 369. Twelve on the per page on Amazon.
So basically, there's a little bit of a mismatch there.
Yeah. On those ones, but you could expand on them.
Yeah.
You've got ideas coming out of your. We've only gone through. Well, less than 20 magazine covers while we've been talking.
Okay, so what we could say then is the first step is for people to go to something like Amazon, other places where they can see headlines. We're talking about magazines here as a good example, and just look at the headlines and see the kind of thing that's been used, and just bear in mind that these magazines are selling, the production costs on a magazine, a colour magazine, is horrendous.
Yeah.
So they must be selling a good number at that kind of price, you know.
67, so, refreshing ideas to make every day more fun.
Yeah.
the same one from Stress Free Summer. Is your house making you fat? Now, would you read on from that headline?
That's a very interesting one, isn't it? That's a real intriguing headline.
Yeah. So that's another way of making a headline. So that one, you'd probably read on. And sometimes headlines can be, you've mentioned on when you've done solo ads that you've actually almost wanted people not to click because you're paying per click.
Yeah, that's right. It's like reverse psychology.
Yeah, headlines can be used to do that. So if you're targeting people with wanted hearing aids, it'd be sort of, is your hearing aid playing up? And if they didn't want to do it, that's fine. You don't want someone who doesn't want it.
No. If you start talking about hearing, it could be you're making it not targeted enough.
Yeah. So you can use headlines to repel people as well as attract them, because they'll, done correctly, they'll actually attract the audience you want and repel the ones that are just tire kickers.
Yeah, that's right. I've not gone absolutely over the top yet with solo ad, but I'm tempted to, and I might get an opportunity to with one marketer that I've got. I've bought a multi number of solos with him, and I might just get him to agree to do one that's crazy, Right, really, really push people away and just see what happens.
But again, we were talking about squeeze pages. They're probably the closest to a magazine thing, and you've got a few seconds to attract people, so maybe a magazine headline would be better.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually.
And that's 67 refreshing ideas to make every day more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may well want to actually sign up for that.
Yeah. Well, certainly, 67 ideas to make everyday online more fun. I think I'd probably be interested in that.
But we got Maxim's top 100, someone else's all-time 100 all-time greatest. Lists also sell, the idea of a list, because it's easily digestible chunks.
Okay, so in other words, the product's a list.
Or a list of what's in the product. Yeah, you've seen sales letters again. If you created the product first and want to do a really simple sales letter, you do the ones like on page 23 you'll learn blah 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 blah. On page 37 you'll learn X Y Z. And then you've seen the ones where it's all you need is then a underscore for the blank to do blank, and again it increases people's intrigue level.
I see, yeah.
Because they're trying to fill in the gaps like a crossword.
Oh yeah.
And you do it that way.
Okay.
So headlines, yeah, and subheadlines, and then the sort of headlines that go through the product, the sales letter as well, so that people can skim it if they want to and just and get the gist of what's actually being sold.
Yeah, and another thing they could do there is underline important points.
Yep.
Which highlights them rather than gives them as a sort of headline kind of thing.
Yeah, and we've got quick and easy's cropped up, another one I just looked at.
Excuse me.
Okay, yeah.
So we've got cold, nice.
Yeah, 74 quick and easy summaries. So 74 quick and a number, quick and easy, blah, blah.
Sounds good.
Steak dinners that won't dent your wallet.
So what's the difference between a headline and a subheadline then?
The headline is the biggest point size, the biggest font size. And the subheadline is the next size down. So
the headlines. So I'm thinking of psychology. So the headline catches the person, catches your prospect.
Yep. And something then, we'll put something before that as well. I forget what that's called, but sometimes there's a sort of lead into it.
Like a small at the top.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And I know the kind
and
of thing.
And then the subheadline expands on that, and then your first paragraph expands on that further, and so on and.
So it leads into the body, the subhead.
Yes, yep.
Okay.
It acts almost as a go-between.
Okay.
And you don't always need one. And sometimes people perversely read the subheadline rather than the main heading.
Which probably means your main heading isn't very good.
Or, I don't know how many books you've read recently where I find myself I often don't read the chapter headings.
Okay.
I might have read them when I skimmed it in Amazon to decide whether to buy them or not, but I probably don't read them when I'm actually turning the page. I get to the actual meat of the page, usually.
I see, yeah.
So not everyone reads headlines.
No.
Which is why bullet points work. I'll often, if I'm doing, not so much on WSOs, but generally I'll use bullet points quite early in the actual sales copy, because again, it's an easy introduction.
Yeah, yeah.
And visually, alternate bold.
Oh, yeah.
Because again, it breaks it up visually.
Right.
You've gone a bit quieter at my end. I don't know if that's just because you moved the microphone away when you coughed.
I didn't actually know.
Oh, right, okay. Just in case it messes up the recording. That's come back a bit now.
Probably has messed up the recording.
Yeah. But again, if you've got a lists people do skim. So if one's bold, the next one is just normal font, then bold, normal. It breaks it up again, doesn't appear as a body of text.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Some people will just bold certain words within it. Free often gets bolded for some reason.
Yeah. It does, yeah. But it's not always the best thing.
And you've mentioned the yellow highlighter. You can do that easily in sales pages and things like that. You can highlight behind words and things, or change colours, or underline. The only thing online with underlining is people often think it's a link.
Okay.
So you have to be a little bit careful of that.
Yeah, particularly if it's blue.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to do it another colour or something, and
obviously it isn't.
So it doesn't look like a link.
Yeah. And if you've got an advert that's working reasonably well, or a sales letter that works reasonably well, the first thing to test is the headline.
Okay. you do the two exactly the same, and the only thing different is the headline.
Yeah, and possibly even just the capitalisation on the headline that can affect.
Yeah, okay.
If you go into your word processor and do headline case or just sentence case, headline case up puts a capital letter at the start of each word.
Yeah.
Sentence case doesn't. And again, that can make all the difference to the readability, and therefore that makes a difference to how well it sells.
Okay.
We're talking the kind of thing that statisticians would they drool over.
Oh, yes.
But you need the kind of numbers to do that. Initially, you just go, generally speaking, with a headline, you put it in what's known as headline case. So it's not, it's mixed. Every word starts with a capital letter. But very much go into Amazon again and just see what happens to the product names. And follow that, because that's what they do.
Okay.
And again, just looking at Amazon, frequently bought together is in headline case. So the F and the B and the T are all, each of those have got a capital.
Right.
Amazon spend a lot more on testing than you or I can afford.
Mm.
So follow what they do because it probably works.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also it's what people are used to. Because we take so many shortcuts as we go. So if you can make it simple for people, they're more likely to do it.
Makes sense.
Because they don't have to think. And again, it sounds really bad saying that, but it's just how it goes.
Yeah. So you're effectively leading them along that process.
Yeah.
A good sales letter is leading the person to the destination that they really want, and you're assuring them that they're going in the right place.
Yeah,
all the way through.
Right. Yeah. Without distracting them too much. And again, generally speaking, only offer them, well, again, Sugarman definitely said only offer them one product, don't give them a choice.
Okay.
Because he tested, and for the stuff he was selling, choices confuse them and reduce sales.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Which flies in the face of most of what we do in internet marketing, which is often given one, two, and three choice, but you bold the one you want to buy.
I see, yeah. So when does that happen, then, when you get them a choice?
Generally speaking, if you give people three choices, they're probably okay with it.
Okay.
If you give them 10 or 20, which is what he was doing with watches, he actually found that he sold more watches if he only offered them one type of watch.
Right. Okay.
Whereas a dozen in the advert, which logically you and I would have said would sell more watches because people had more choice, they just gave up and decided, I will decide later.
Ah, yeah. Interesting, yeah.
And typically with internet marketing, then there's usually an A, B, and C, but the one you want them to buy is the one that's bolded.
Okay. So I'm just trying to think of when that happens. I can't think of a situation
If you go into HostGator or whatever for hosting, there'll be choice of baby package, etc.
Oh, I see, yeah.
So often that happens.
Yeah.
If you find a WordPress plugin, then there's the single site, there's the multi-site, and there's a developer license. So you can buy it for your own site, all the sites you own, or for anything you sell on as well.
You even get on WSOs, don't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, regularly. So,
interestingly, thinking about your WSO you just launched, well, a week ago.
Yeah.
And you had the three choices on the upsell page.
Yeah, because I
basically didn't give much of an explanation. It was just three buttons, really.
Well, yeah, I was being lazy.
Were you? Okay. There's no psychology behind it, then.
No, there was no logic behind that. It was, I pressed the wrong button, paid for the thing, let's get something up there fast. it was that academic. But with something like The Economist did a subscription thing that I read about, which I've got an affiliate program that I promote to try, and they've kept it, so it's working. Basically, with The Economist, you could buy the electronic version for one price, let's call it 50 quid or something, or you can buy the print version for £100, or you can buy the print plus the electronic price for the same price as just the print.
Right, okay.
Guess what everyone goes for?
the both, the package?
Yeah, because you actually make it a no-brainer decision.
Yeah.
And if you want to go into this in a lot more depth, get a book by Robert, it's not copywriting, but get a book by Robert Cialdini called Science of Influence, something like that.
Okay.
And that goes into what he calls triggers, which are all the shortcuts we take because modern life is just happens too fast that we can't not take shortcuts.
I understand, yeah, I understand.
And if you want really good training on sales letters, Dan Kennedy's book, Ultimate Sales Letter.
Okay. It's a book, is it?
Yeah, it's about...
A hard book. Yeah.
About a tenner. It'd be $10, £10 over here, $10 in the States probably, or whatever. But it's not expensive.
Wow.
You're learning from one of the top 10 copywriters in the world.
Is he still around?
Dan Kennedy, yes.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
he's $25,000 a day if he's got space.
Wow.
And if you want a sales letter written, it's more than that plus royalties. If he'll do the sales letter for you, because he's much more into TV commercials, the half-hour ones.
Oh, yeah.
Because the royalties on those are much more than just a sales letter.
Yeah, I bet they are.
So we're digressing, but it's an art, not a science, sales letters. You can put triggers in that will help people along the way, that make it...
Yeah, yeah.
Make it as though you're their friend and you're almost doing them a favour introducing them to it, and that works for me and it works for a lot of other people.
Also, I think there's a good bit of psychology there, that people should have that kind of attitude, you know, and if you can't really think in those terms, then perhaps product you're offering isn't really right, and it's not a good enough. When I say quality, I don't mean that it's made well. I mean that it's doing its job, that it's worthwhile. You know, if you've got a product. I mean, for instance, I promoted the package that I put together, Become an Expert in 30 Days. Which is basically using Sean's core training, and I added to it, make it into very good value product, really.
Yeah.
And you know, I know that will benefit people tremendously. So that's the kind of thing, isn't it? You've got something that you know is going to help people.
Yeah, and also keeping it congruent. Because again, things stand. You know, you go onto a page and you look at it and something just looks wrong and you can't put your finger on it. Or you start reading and something just causes you just to stop reading and go back.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means it's not congruent, and that means something somewhere doesn't fit.
This is the benefit of writing your own sales letters and having them in an autoresponder. Because obviously, if you are promoting affiliate offers, well, if you're just promoting affiliate offers and that's it, you're just doing affiliate marketing, then you've got to line your traffic up.
Yeah.
And that must be very hard to do, to like get your traffic to line up, you know, so it's congruent with where the traffic's coming from, the offer. It's going to be a mismatch there almost certainly every time.
Yeah, if I'm doing a pre-sale like that, I'll actually explain it.
Yeah.
And then I'll say, this one's a bit hypey, but cut underneath the hype, it's actually worth buying.
Oh, yeah.
I've done that before.
Yeah, yeah.
And that works because people are thinking, well, okay, because I'd have ordinarily discarded it.
But I'm not going to because he said, I'm prepared to waive my concern in that area at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the other reason guarantees are used a lot.
It's interesting. I'm listening to Sean Mize on the guarantee, because he says that he doesn't offer guarantees very often. Although I noticed, I think he's doing a little bit more now, but he doesn't really need to, because his people are all pre-qualified and they all know him already when he's promoting, because he just promotes to his list basically.
Yeah.
His own products, so it's very, very congruent. And what he finds is that it doesn't make much difference whether he offers a guarantee or not, and it avoids any legal issues.
Yeah, it depends what you're selling, but as a general rule, the longer the guarantee, the better.
That's right, yeah.
Over here, you'll know it, the international audience, won't we? We've got a store called Argos, which is effectively a catalogue store.
Yeah.
You go in and pick a product, and they used to do a 14-day money-back guarantee. They've now moved to 30.
Really? That's interesting.
And the logic on that will be that if you've got 14... If you guys... Say you had a four-hour guarantee on a product. In your head, there's a little clock ticking.
Yeah.
Well, actually, on that particular one, it would be a great big alarm clock with huge bells on it.
That's right. I've got four hours, I've got to make a decision.
Yeah, if it's 7 days, it's still ticking. If it's 14, it's getting less. If it's a month, it's less. If it's a year's guarantee, I'll do something with it soon.
Yeah, that's
right. But if it's like a set of kitchen knives, it's probably got a 25-year guarantee, which no one will take them up on because you know that if they're offering a 25-year guarantee, it's probably quite a decent product.
Yeah.
And Jay Abraham would obviously suggest a really brash guarantee. He'll do things like double your money back.
Interesting, yeah.
He calls it risk reversal. Because if it doesn't work, then it actually costs him money.
Yeah.
So on that one, you'd probably have to prove that you actually did something rather than just bought the product and sent it back.
Yeah, indeed.
But guarantees can make generally speaking, the brasher and bolder the guarantee, the better.
And of course, that's actually quite interesting there, the double your money, you know, guarantee, because obviously you can be a little bit more harsh in dealing with people. What I mean by that is,
yeah,
you know, if it's a $7 WSO and somebody, you know, I had one the other day and I thought, oh, what's the guy doing, you know, refunding now? It wasn't something wrong, and it's not worth getting involved, so just push the button, refund it, that's it.
Yeah.
But obviously, when you're talking about something like that, you think, well, hang on a minute, you know, what have you done with it? You bought it for a purpose. What have you done with it, sort of thing?
But guarantees can be turned into a strong selling point. Again, think of a car where quite a lot nowadays come with a 3 or a 5 year guarantee.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas they used to just come with a year.
Kia is 7 years, isn't it?
Something like that. And televisions and things like that. And you're thinking, well, okay, let's buy the one with a 3 or a 5 year guarantee rather than the one with 12 months. They've got more confidence in their product.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's a psychological thing, isn't there?
Mm.
And also you're thinking, well, that's great because I know it's covered if something happens.
Yeah.
The
same works with internet marketing products. Obviously, you've got people like ClickBank will only give you 56 days. That's the maximum we can have, or 60 days, whatever it is. And PayPal is similar, but you can offer longer. It's just you'd have to be a little bit more discreet about it.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, of course, there is a facility in PayPal to refund.
Yeah.
So, but obviously, you can send people the money, so I can't see why how they can police that, to be honest.
No, it's probably more if they read your sales letter and objected to it. You have to be a little bit careful.
Oh, I see.
Which actually brings us to make sure you can substantiate any claim.
Yeah. Yeah.
So another part of the sales letter we should have covered. Don't just go making up testimonials.
No, actually there is quite strong legal sides
yeah,
to that now.
Yeah, and again, don't go making up money claims and things like that. They have to be substantiated nowadays if you're going to make them.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, reading through the Warrior Forum, you might not think that's particularly enforced.
No.
But it's the way it goes.
Yeah.
So we kind of digressed on sales letters, but I think we've also covered some quite important points.
Yeah, and very interesting.
The other thing I haven't covered yet, this is actually a PS, because that's other thing you should cover.
Oh, yeah.
Noah mentioned earlier that people will read the sales letter and they'll skim down to the bottom.
So what you say is very important.
The PS is generally thought to be a summary.
Oh, yeah.
And often another call to action, because that's the other thing I know I said you shouldn't do it, you wouldn't do it if you're talking to a friend, but sometimes you might. If you really thought the friend would benefit from the product, you'd say, well, actually, you really would buy it. And if you can get away with that in a sales letter or something similar, that's good. But the PS, yeah, summarise the offer, summarise any guarantees, summarise whatever else, and tell them to buy it.
Okay.
Of course, we haven't covered scarcity either, have we?
No.
Which is often used to sell products, so I'm a limited sale, even if it isn't limited, and you know it isn't limited, like the furniture stores, where the sale is basically until hell freezes over, whichever comes later, and it will probably still carry on. But that still works.
Yeah, personally, I like genuine scarcity.
Yeah. It's difficult to do with electrons because people know they're not really in the internet's not exactly in limited supply.
No, because it's basically you're reprinting it all the time, aren't you? When you download it, it's reprinting it.
It's why dime sales work, because they know that if they leave it too long, the price has probably gone up.
Yeah.
That adds scarcity. It's not something it's something I use because it works. Do I like it being used on me? If it's only going up a few cents, I'm happy with it. Yeah, I'll actually wait.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I even do that with things when it says, it's currently 27, it's going to be 97 when it goes live. I think, well, it's good, and I probably would use it, but then I haven't got the money right now, so I'll wait, and when I've got the more money, I'll buy it then. So I have actually done that. I've actually put off buying until it's going to be the full price, or so they say.
Yeah, although quite often the full price never appears. It's the price they'd love to sell it for, but now they can't get it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And the fake countdowns seem to work, but again, don't particularly like those.
Ones that don't actually do anything. Actually, I've got one. I bought a script off Mal Flynn, which does work, so you actually have two pages.
Yeah.
And it'll redirect to the second page when the countdown time has run out, which is, of course, the right way of doing it.
Yeah, done properly, but because we're so used to going back to the page a day later if you really wanted to buy it and the countdown starts again, then most people ignore that.
I think you'd have to clear cookies, and a lot of people wouldn't know to do that.
No, but you almost feel cheated if the thing actually has gone up and you probably don't buy it then. Which comes on to free gifts, which we haven't mentioned either. Bonuses.
Right, okay.
Again, lots of people will, in the sales letter, bonuses and free gifts can work a treat. There was a magazine in the States that gave a free polo shirt took out the subscription. They found that most people were actually buying the magazine for the free polo shirt.
Wow. Interesting, isn't it?
So free gifts can work. It's why all the stuff you still see on TV or get through the post or with the free alarm clock, it's a free alarm clock that's, 99 cents, because that works.
Yeah.
Again, with internet marketing, you can do it very, very easily because it costs you nothing to give extra bonuses.
That's right, yeah. Well, I did a promo with Todd Gross. And he basically was promoting a product, and the benefit for me was I would get people on my list because they'd have to come to me for the bonuses.
Yep.
So I provided the bonuses, and he did the sales video and everything promoting the product, and then he'd obviously in that he'd be explaining about the bonuses, and he'd get the sales, I'd get the list, I'd get my list built, and I just went and got. I bought a load of resale right products, which really lined up well with the main product. So it wasn't that difficult to do.
Yeah, and the only thing again you've got to watch is that you don't give so much away that people think is the main product actually rubbish because they're giving so much away.
Indeed. Well, it's the psychology behind all these things, and again, it's testing, but it's a bit hard when it's an affiliate promotion, isn't it?
Yeah. You need traffic, which is like hen's teeth.
Exactly.
Unless you're buying traffic, which is a whole different ball game.
Absolutely. Okay, Trevor.
Nothing to do with writing sales letters.
Absolutely not. No. Have you anything else you want to add?
I think the main thing is good headline.
Yeah.
Write naturally.
Yeah.
And in that, I would suggest you do a brain dump. Don't edit as you write.
No.
So write now, come back to it in 3, 6, 12 hours, 24 hours time, whatever it happens to be. Edit then, because they're two different parts of the brain and it just doesn't mix. It's like fire and water.
Okay.
And then if it's something you care about, read it out loud.
Okay.
And if you've got someone who's mad enough to work through it with you, that can work a treat, because you bounce ideas off each other. The other one will spot things that you didn't spot, and vice versa, and it will be a better thing. But it depends how much the product is. If it's a high value product, do that. If it's low value,
probably not worth it.
It may or may not be worth it.
Yeah.
But okay. Definitely at least write it and then come back to it a few hours or a day or two later and just do some final editing, because it probably needs it.
Okay.
And the other thing is, do it. You can only get better.
Exactly. It's like the product creation. You know, people have to make the step.
Yeah. Because if you don't make that step, you haven't got anything to improve on.
No, that's right. You can put it off and put it off and put it off and put it off, and you're still nowhere.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely no good at all.
So, yeah, okay, for something we haven't 100% planned before tonight.
Exactly. Yeah. No, they're great. Hopefully this is useful to people, and certainly I think as an additional training, picking up on the main things and emphasising, you know, the most important points and giving a few ideas about how to get going, how to, you know, keep moving forward as a copywriter, and emphasising once again, you know, that we do need to be copywriters. If we want to make a living online, then copywriting is absolutely essential. Either we do it or we pay someone to do it, and that's very expensive. What actually I did when I first got going, was I would write the sales copy. Admittedly, these were for low-end products, so it wasn't quite as critical. But I wrote the sales copy myself, and then I got a copywriter to edit it, and that meant that it didn't cost me so much. And it was interesting because, well, I did a split test with Matthew Glanfield, who's, as you know, is out of internet marketing now, but he was a good guy, and he promoted four of my products to his list. He said, oh, by the way, your copywriter did an excellent job. So I was quite chuffed by that.
That's good.
Yeah, and what we did was, basically I had a voiceover on each one. So it wasn't a video, but there was a voiceover, and the voiceover was very different from the sales copy. And I think that worked quite well, is that people would come to the page and they'd see the headline and be listening to the 1 minute audio, which is very catchy. And then obviously those, so you caught the auditory person, you've got the visual because you've got the headline, and you've got the graphic as well. And then obviously kinesthetic would be more sort of a touchy-feely kind of things that you have in the sales copy. But yeah, one of them did quite well. I got 10% conversion rate out of one.
That's a good conversion rate.
Yeah, for seven, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah, well, mail order goes overboard if it's more than 0.5%.
Really? Yeah. I mean, Matthew said that's actually quite good for a squeeze page. Is 10%. You know, it's on the spectrum of a squeeze page. You know, we're looking for 50, aren't we? But
ideally, so, yes.
Yeah, but 10 is quite normal for a squeeze page. So for a sales page, that's very good.
Yeah, which comes into, there's a lot of hype involved in all of these things.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Okay. That's that. Thank you very much, Trevor. Yeah, that's very helpful.
Right. Thanks, Richard.
And I hope this benefits a lot of people, your subscribers as well as mine. And I'll be in touch soon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.